Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Motorsport Magazine podcast. It's November, and that means I'm joined by Matt Oxley, our MotoGP journalist, and Freddie Spencer. So we're going to look back on the 2018 season of MotoGP. We've just been testing. Well, we haven't just been testing, but the grid's been testing. So what we'll try and do is definitely look back on the MotoGP season. Inevitably, we'll look ahead to 2019, but we'll do that again probably in March, no doubt. And actually, if you keep an eye on the website in the next few weeks, hopefully you'll see somewhere where you may join us to look ahead to the MotoGP season as well. So do keep an eye on that. It'll be in London. There are a lot of TBCs for this event that we're trying to put together for you all. But you'll be involved, so do keep an eye on that. Hopefully Freddie, hopefully Matt as well. But first, let's look back over 2018. I was just looking back this morning about our preview podcast. 7-8 months ago now, and you both said Marc Márquez would win it, so that's what we pay you for.
bet the thousand so far.
So he got 9 wins. That's his most dominant season since 2014. Where does this season's championship win rate for you guys?
Well, it obviously is another great championship that Marc put together. If you look at in the way that I guess maybe the way that I would rate it, or one way, would be on really the level that his bike was. And I think it's probably safe to say that and Cal Crutchlow talked about it. You could even see from Franco Morbidelli, as Matt and I were just discussing, we'll get into that in a minute, obviously, when we talk about 219 testing, but the difficulty of riding the Honda. And that difficulty is really, I would say, probably put it down to the margin of forgiveness that the bike has, and to push it to the edge, and if you go a little bit beyond, there's a penalty. There's not a lot of forgiveness in that range of letting you get away with things. And so, but Marc has proven that he is probably, without question, the most gifted when it comes to anticipating what a motorcycle does. And it's the reason why he can save the crashes he does. And it's the reason why he can recover from situations. The other thing, Matt and Jack, that I think Marc is so good at is adapting to situations. And I mean, we saw that time and time again this year, where he is able to immediately make adjustments. And it made me think about, every time I see that real quick, it made me think about when I was a kid. And you, as natural, I would go back and think of my own riding when you see something or I'm analyzing it and what Marc is doing or any rider is doing. And I've often said that growing up dirt tracking, when conditions change from the last, you get off a bike, a race, and by the time you get back on the track, it's completely different. And you got 12 laps, is all the race is, and you got the first corner to be adapted to the new conditions. That's it. If not, you're going backwards. And that's what Marc does. He rides dirt track.
And that's exactly, that's one of the reasons he does it, and motocross as well, because he says every time, every lap, the track's different. So you're constantly adjusting your lines, your forces you put into the bike every single lap. And I remember the first time he raced a MotoGP bike in the rain was Le Mans 2013. On the 8th lap, he was the fastest guy on the track. Right. You know, and I was just spellbound. Couldn't believe it. I mean, how do you do that? But because he just has that ability to whatever the conditions are doing, he just has that feel from doing that every day of
his
life.
Exactly. And so that ability to adapt, combined with his quickness of how he reacts to situations, that's what impressed me when I saw him dirt tracking. As a dirt tracker myself my entire life, is you know someone is good by the way that they, how quick they move and anticipate, and they move in unison with the motorcycle, because a dirt track bike moves so quickly, if you don't stay on top of it, you're behind, and you're not going to be good at it. But Mark can do that. And so that's to me, this season, I saw so many times him doing that, his ability to recover and maximize his situation.
I mean, you look at, you know, he won more races than anybody else. He won the championship. He helped Honda win the team's championship, the constructors' championship. He helped Repsol Honda win the team's world championship. And he crashed more than anybody else. You know what I mean? 23 crashes through the 19 rounds. And as we say, you know, the Honda has a certain way of achieving its lap time.
Yes.
You know, they build a bike to be the fastest bike, and with Marquez on it, it is.
Yeah.
You know, and he fell off 19 times, 23 times, only twice in a race.
Yes.
So
right.
There you go. So that, generally when he crashes,
that's right,
they're not accidents, they're actually grip tests.
Yeah,
he's actually just seeing how far he can get. And the thing about the Honda, because it was kind of built for the Bridgestones, to use the amazing grip of the Bridgestone front into corners, it was built to use that. And with the Michelin, it's very different. You cannot put that much force through that front tire. So they have to run the hard tire all the time. Every single race, maybe one or two, I don't know, I'm pretty sure every single race this year, Marquez had to run the front tire. And as Freddie will know, a hard front tire gives you much less feedback.
Yes.
When you have a soft tire, when it starts to lose grip, it kind of smears a bit, doesn't it? You know, the compound, it starts to smear across the track and you can feel it.
Yes.
With a hard tire, it's gone.
When it lets go, it goes. Yeah.
And because Mark knows he's going to have to race the hard tire, he has to practice on the hard tire. And so he's always pushing it to that limit to see how it's going to react before it finally lets go. That's why he crashes a lot. And that's why Honda, their biggest thing right now is, you know, they've got the engine sorted. They've got, you know, the Big Bang engine in there and everything, reverse crankshaft. They've got all that sorted. The chassis works very well, but they need to sort that. So that's what they're working on now, the front end.
Yes.
And Jerez yesterday or the day before, Valencia. Yeah. I keep saying that.
Next week.
Valencia. Jerez next week. He did the whole day on the medium front. So they've found something. I know Bradle had been testing Olin's forks parts and different stuff to the front of the bike. You know, they don't want to change the balance of the bike because they'll lose its advantages.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get rid of the disadvantages without losing the advantages. So if they can do that, then, you know, he will, hopefully fall off a lot less next year. Because, you know, he, with his shoulder, we've got to a point now where he's in quite a bit of trouble. You know, he's, the last six races, he had to race with that shoulder very heavily strapped.
Yeah. And you could see in his crashes the last weekend that every time the airbag inflated, the shoulder was in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was in pain.
Did you ever dislocate your shoulder, Freddie?
I never did, but I know Eddie Lawson, I know, did. Eddie had a lot of problem with
because,
his shoulder.
Because, I mean, it's... hurts.
Yeah, it is. I broke my collarbone a few times, but I
when he crashed that. In when Marquez crashed in qualifying on Saturday at Valencia, I ran it back on the, you know, obviously on the time thing. It was from him losing the front at turn four, obviously the first right hander, it's front's cold, it's a hard tire, away he goes. To him getting back to the pits with a dislocated shoulder, going into the team truck to have it pop back in, and then getting back out on his spare bike, 6:13. Yeah. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
With a guy, and that's his mental strength and his physical strength. And just quickly, his three really amazing moments were his recovery from that Valencia crash, his recovery from the Misano crash when he went out, and also after he got beaten by Lorenzo at Red Bull Ring, where Red Bull Ring kind of Lorenzo kind of did a Marquez on him, didn't he? Really, really pulled a real kind of block pass on him, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the race, they're in the kind of ante room before they go on the podium, and Marquez is just laughing and joking with Lorenzo and sort of saying, oh, when you came past me, I was nearly losing control and I was sliding here and there. How do you beat someone? You know, that Lorenzo must have gone, what do I have to do to screw this guy up? You know what I mean? So that he's just incredibly strong.
On that same point, from Lorenzo's point of view, was beating Marquez then really important ahead of next year? From a mindset point of view, knowing that I can beat Marquez at not his own game, but his own tricks.
That's actually, you know, Jorge and Mark have battled quite a few times. You go back to that, the pass at Silverstone a few years ago. What was that, in 14?
Yeah,
I believe it was. Or maybe 13. I believe it was 13.
Which is actually the day he dislocated his shoulder the first time.
And so I think that for Mark, as Matt is saying, he has a certain independence that comes from, he's won, obviously 5 championships out of the last 6 years. He has a tremendous amount of belief in what he can do with the motorcycle, belief in his ability to recover and move on and not make the same mistake in the race or have the same issue. So there's a lot of things. I think for Jorge that that day, beating Mark, and for him, all the struggles he had with Ducati and then getting in a position to win some races, it was more important for Jorge to do that. I'm not so sure the long term, there's really any benefits or any lack of benefit one way or the other, because Jorge is a champion himself, and so I think that it's going to be interesting, obviously being on the same team and what's going to happen. But I think for Jorge the most important thing was winning on the Ducati. It didn't matter who it was, and getting at least 2 wins.
Is that as he did. Him winning on a Ducati is something Rossi can do again. Lorenzo Rossi, there's that.
There's definitely an aspect of that there that they're all trying to beat each other's records or take away each other's not take away their achievements, but to better their achievements and so on. That, that's how you drive yourself, isn't it? You need to have goals and targets, don't you? And some of them come from within, some of them come from without. I think that's one of the reasons why Jorge was so mad after Aragon, because I think there he knew he had a very good chance of beating Mark again, and he fell off at the first corner. And you can argue why, but he fell off at the first corner. And there's that old racing phrase, isn't there? You can't win a race at the first corner,
right,
but you can lose a race at the first corner. And I think to me that was why he was so mad there, because he knew with that speed of that Ducati down that long back straight, which is to the last corner.
Yeah, exactly.
He had
a
good
chance.
If he could just stay with Mark all through the race,
and
on that last lap,
If and buts, though, right?
Yeah.
But he was frustrated, and a lot of times that frustration is directed at someone else. But he knows, that he's the rider on the bike. And I mean, to have that happen in the first corner, I still believe there was some. It was definitely a little bit off throttle. It just he was wide, some of that frustration was directed at himself too. For something like that happening.
How impressive is it that he was able to win on that bike, as it had to adapt so much through the year? Lorenzo, to go from a bike he couldn't win at all, couldn't get to the front, and then at the end he was
well
one of the class of the
it's front. Interesting and Matt certainly can talk even more because he with the riders a little bit, but a little bit I've read there was a big change between the 17 Ducati and 18 Ducati. Jack Miller talked about that, that it was unbelievable, the difference. And the 19 is basically just a tweaked version of the 18. But it sounds like that's mainly all of the issues that they had before were improved with the 18 bike.
Yeah, I think
And I think that is probably what made as much of a difference and why he was able to be, you know, then when you struggle, and we've talked about it before, always, he's an emotional writer. He's an emotional person. And so the struggles, and then sometimes it takes also a little time to, and I guess they made a couple more changes, but to be back in that position to believe you can do it.
Yeah, I think he went to Ducati at the right time. Whereas Rossi obviously didn't, and the bike has just been getting better and better and better, and they've been, like we were just saying with the Honda, minimizing their disadvantages without destroying their advantages. And Jorge also I mean, I'm very impressed by the way he changed as a rider, you know, because we saw him on the Yamaha, he won in a very particular way. He generally got out front on Bridgestones and just disappeared. That's what he did, and he rode in a very particular way, incredibly smooth, you know, and all about carrying corner speed. And then on the Ducati, he's worked out that the only way you can get it steered through the corner is use the rear brake on corner entry, which is to get the thing, you know, basically skidding it into the corner in a very, you know, minimal kind of way. But so to do that, he's completely changed his riding style, and also realizing that with the Ducati, the more you lean it in the middle of the corner, the slower it goes.
Yeah, the less
you know. So he's had to completely rewrite his whole. You know, he took him a year to work that out, comparing his data to Dovizioso and Petrucci. Say, well, I'm leading, using more lean angle through the corner. I should be going faster, but I'm going slower. And eventually, he got to work that out. So he's going into from a very flowing corner speed style on the Yamaha to a more kind of stop and turn on the Ducati, which is what the Ducati wants.
Yes. You know?
And that's what Dovizioso is very good at doing.
Well, that's exactly right, Matt, because of before with that high corner speed, the only way you can make the rate is a lot of lean angle. And you put the bike in that for a particular reason. But with the Ducati, because of the way that it didn't turn, and Mark does, and I've talked about this before, Mark, the way that he helps rotate the Honda into a corner basically as he's leaning the bike in, it's above the grip ability of the bike. So then that way, as he gets to a certain point, it starts to actually, the rear of the bike starts to rotate. And the reason why that is you with a bike that won't steer, instead of it having to turn this much of an arc, if you shallow that out, then it works better because it will still turn. The Ducati, and I've ridden bikes like the Ducati was, to where you would think that by applying lean angle, or you would think even by slowing the speed down, that it would help it turn. But the only thing that would allow that is reducing the speed so much to where it turns, where you're losing time. And the fact you're losing one of its strengths, which is acceleration, you know. And so he had to work that out. But it's interesting. The other thing is with Jorge that I noticed, it may have been the last thing they got to was with the comfort level on the bike. Remember he talked about, and everybody out there probably remembers this, where he would get up front and then he would basically wear himself down. And because of the ergonomics, he was so much load on his arms that he was losing, you know, his endurance basically. And they fixed that and it was the next race, remember?
Yeah, exactly. The sort of fat fuel tank. I mean, it's actually incorrect to call it a fuel tank because that's not really the fuel tank. The fuel tank now is under
that's
there,
right.
Isn't it?
But it is.
We'll call it the fuel tank.
It's, right.
And he kind of, they stuck this big, yeah. I mean, it looked horrible.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like they made it out of plasticine or something, and it was kind of stuck on the back of the tank and off he went and won, you know?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
But I mean, they'd been working to that for a while,
yes,
I think.
And that's,
you know,
what I mean.
But even in Austria, I think they were sort of 3D printing different ergonomic bits at Bologna and whizzing them out to the race, you know.
Yeah.
So I think Ducati have learned an awful lot from him. And I think Dovizioso learned quite a lot from him. Once Lorenzo was winning, Dovizioso then started looking at his data. And he'd never done that. He didn't bother until he was beating him.
Sure.
Why would you? You know.
Right.
So I think Dovizioso would then, because they've got such different, could also learn some things from Lorenzo that he'd never have learned. So it'll be interesting. The whole Dovizioso staying there and Lorenzo leaving Ducati and going to Honda, you know, how much is that going to damage Ducati and how much is it going to help Honda? You know, so it's one of those sort of things when a top rider leaves a top factory and goes to another top factory, not only does he help the top factory that he's going to, he also damages the top factory that he's leaving, you know, which is obviously why you try and take the rider away from the good factory. You know?
Sure.
So there's so many interesting kind of dynamics going on now and into next season.
One of the questions we've had from someone called Tanush, who sent in 10 questions, which made my life quite easy today. was the GP18 truly the class of the field, or was the latest version of the Honda made to fit Mark like a glove, which has then made the bike appear tough to tame for the others?
I think Dovizioso won 4 races on the Ducati, Lorenzo won 3. Mark won 8 or 9 on the Honda, Crutchlow won 1. So that probably answers that question, I'd say. I think the Ducati was probably more friendly, but, you know, it didn't win the championship. The interesting thing about this year's bike is something that's only kind of become known to most of us quite recently is, you know, they've all been using slick shift gearboxes since 2011, 2012, 2013, which make the gear changes much more smooth. That's a good thing for speed, but it also unsettles the bike less coming out of corners, so you can actually shift gear when you're still lent over, so you can shift gear at the correct point rather than having to do it too soon or too. Ducati have now got a super slick shift gearbox, which is even smoother than the other one, and none of the others have got this yet. And it's all about reducing tire temperature, because the Michelins are so sensitive to how you use them. You know, if you use them right, you're there. If you use them wrong, you're not. You know, and obviously you've got 270 horsepower. Every time you engage gear, that's a big old kick to the tire, isn't it? Mm. You know, so you're going to get heat spikes every time you shift gear. You're going to get a heat spike and going down, I guess, as well. Mm. So they've got this. They've taken another step forward on the others, and they're. I think that's one reason they can keep the rear tire in better condition than a lot of the others. I think, and Dovizioso had a lot of problems. I don't know when they introduced that, you see, because Dovizioso had a lot of trouble with tire life early in the season, and then they got it sorted. So I don't know when they introduced that.
Well,
be interesting,
and we know
to find
that
out.
Jorge could run the soft tire, and he won races on it using it. So we know that is a huge advantage if you can do that.
Exactly,
and that is... something that benefited him. And,
well, again,
and obviously they had some tools to work with that helped allow that happen.
Yeah. And if he might have, I think he moved to Ducati at a very good time. He might also be moving to Honda at a really good time. You know, I mean, and this is what it's all about, isn't
sure
it?
Sure, it is. Timing
is everything. You choose your moments, you know,
right,
and you see that bike is there now, but you can see that they're the guys working on them know what they're doing, and you can see the direction they're going in.
Well, and as we said, as we were talking earlier about with Mark, with the Ducati, one thing that's impressive about it is the versatility. You have riders of different riding styles, different abilities, that it seems to help them bring the best out of them. And that's a sign of a well-designed motorcycle, at least a good foundation. And that would be certainly the 16. There was the 16?
The 16 was when they started winning again.
No, this
again,
year. I know that they run,
people like Abraham, I think, had a 16 and then went up to a 17. When Rabat got hurt and other things happened, some people went up to... but what you were talking about, Miller as well, is on a GP19 for next year.
Yes.
He was on a GP715 last year.
Exactly, and he made that jump.
GP17.
That's right.
And so he's jumped 2 years,
and
he just cannot believe.
I know.
So,
he said
Ducati,
it's not even the same. Exactly.
Gigi Deligna is a very clever
absolutely.
Guy.
Absolutely.
And he really is.
And so I would say that overall you would have to give Ducati the nod in a bike that certainly fits the most different riders' personalities, and allows the riders to have confidence in being able to push it. Because the reality is to push a bike to its limit, is you have to trust what it's going to do, and certainly to do it consistently, not just for one lap, but consistently. And you saw that this year, as we were talking about with Mark, he could certainly get the most out of it, but he had to try some things, and some mistakes were made, some crashes happened because of trying to figure out where that limit is. And that I think, as Matt said, is the one area that I would be rest assured that Honda is working on, is try to help keep Mark off the ground, or at least where he won't feel like that he has to take those risks to find out where that edge is. Yeah. You know,
we have a question actually from Peter Spires about how Marquez and Alonso, Lorenzo's vastly different styles will work next year. Would Honda change the bike to suit Lorenzo so that it works for Lorenzo?
I don't know. I can tell you up front that certainly Mark is the world champion, and he is, you know, the rider that's there, and that would be a given. Will they do everything they can to try to make sure that Jorge, because especially he's come from winning on the Ducati, the last thing the world Honda wants is for him to not be successful on the Honda. And I also think that, you know, him coming from the Ducati, when Ducati is good, that's a benefit too, because he'll bring that information with him and will help the Honda engineers and the team understand where their bike is weaker specifically. They already know, but specifically where and where that they need to improve that. And, you know, but they don't have anything. I mean, they won the world championship, and ultimately that's what matters. And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, Jorge said himself, you know, he thanked Mark for not putting the stops on, you know, that situation.
And that's another thing about, again, going just briefly about Mark's, you know, his strength, mental strength, that he didn't block that. And he's already said that there'll be no excuses. You know, if he beats me, he's beaten me. I'm on the same bike. But, I mean, and going back to Lorenzo, the bike will still be the RC213V. But for sure, you know, they will have tiny differences in the setup. And sometimes Crutchlow and Pedrosa and Marquez, they sometimes use slightly different frames, but the differences were tiny, just tuned to their kind of styles or whatever. So there will be some differences. But it's going to be just amazing watching those two. To me, it's the kind of Senna-Prost thing. You know, you've got the two greatest riders in the top team. And you know, that's never happened in MotoGP before, never, that you've had two guys that have won the last seven championships between them in the same team. So that's a pretty special, and you know, everyone still talks about Senna and Prost, don't they?
Sure.
You know, 30 years on, and I think, well, I hope that we'll still be talking about Marquez Lorenzo 30 years on.
And Matt, there'd be no reason why that couldn't happen, you know, and that's why I think Jorge, this challenge, because as we've seen on a given day, Jorge doesn't back down, you know, from Mark, and he's taken all the pressure that Mark puts on him, and vice versa. And so I think they could have some great battles. And because I remember, you know, a couple of years ago we were talking about Maverick. You know, one of the things, him coming to the Yamaha, I was looking forward to seeing the battles between Mark and Maverick, because that goes back many years. I talked to Laura Spuz, and they were talking about that when they were 10, 11 years old, they would battle, and that Maverick was actually, a lot of times, would come out on top on that. And so I thought it would have been fascinating. Well, this is different in a similar way, but like you said, they've won the last seven world championships, and so you would expect that great champions like that, they, when they get in battle, it's at a high level where it just basically is down to the end, and really usually no mistakes are made. And so it should be exciting.
If you're Dovi, do you look at this and think, you know, I finished second this year, second year in a row, is it a bigger opportunity? Because you think Marquez and Lorenzo could not necessarily take each other out, but they'll be focusing on each other so much that Dovizioso can just smoothly work his way.
Dovizioso is probably the kind of I'm not saying that, you know, to exist at that level you have to be very, very, very intelligent. You know, they're not just talented riders, they're very, very bright. They've got to think about a million different things, and but I think Dovizioso is probably the most kind of thoughtful of them, in him and his crew chief Alberto. You know, the way they approach, he has a very specific way of going about fixing problems. You know, he never tries to ride around a problem. That's just not Dovizioso. He will sit and they will get it right, you know. And one of the big reasons why he'd been so strong over the last year or two is time management, you know. And that's a complete, you know, that's kind of adjusting, you know, it's, you're racing at the same time as, I mean, they're all, they've all got to manage the tires now, but which I find fascinating. But you know, he is very, very good at it, and so he's just going to do whatever he can to win. You know, I think he probably knows that in some ways he can't beat those guys just flat out, but he'll try and outthink them.
Well, and he showed that. We talked about, and he's talked about the change from his mental approach over the last couple of years, because remember, he won one race in his first 7 years, and then boom, now he's all of a sudden made these huge strides in his Sunday afternoon performance. And I, you know, watching him on Sunday, the way he just methodically went about being in the race, controlling the race, he never seemed out of control. He never seemed where he was close to crashing. Everyone else was opposite, and we saw that. I mean, for Mark, on everyone was just barely hanging on, and they, you know, you almost could feel that they were on the edge, where Dovi wasn't, and he does that in any conditions. And so I think it would be a mistake, you know, for them or anyone to dismiss him or to think that he couldn't have a chance of winning the world championship, because he has been so close. He knows exactly what he needs to do, and I think Mark and Jorge will certainly understand that and will be aware of what he can do. So you know, I think that also the one thing about Dovi that I've said is when you've not struggled, but when you've been there and it's taken kind of a long time to get in the position he's in, he really never takes that for granted. And so I think he will always be on top of, as you said, he knows, you know, what he needs to do. And talking about tire management real quick, one of the things I'd always work on, I always would run a soft tire, I could run a soft tire, is the key to being able to do that is your awareness. Understanding exactly what actually overheats the tires, not the spinning, it's the load and the movement. And I would literally know on every corner of every lap the load factor, where I was every single moment. Yeah, here. Right here, yeah. Right? And I could, like I said, run a soft tire, and it was good at the end of the race, you know. And because my preventative measures and my and so I see Dovi's, like, you know, and that's where, as you said, he may not be as good, as talented, but he is completely prepared, and that wins world championships too, not just ability.
Was,
you know,
was last season, 2017, his chance though, rather than 2018, because it seems like this year he kind of
they did various things wrong at the beginning of the season. Michelin slightly changed, went softer on some of the compounds, so, you know, they kept running out of tire, and they were like, what's going on? Because I think Michelin kind of said the tires are the same basically, and it took them a while to work that out, and they kept changing between different aero sets, which obviously doesn't only change the setup of the bike, changes the way you need to ride the bike. And eventually they were like, you know, what are we doing? We need to just come up with one aero set and just stick with that, and then we'll know where we are. And that was kind of mid-season, and already by then the championship was gone. But you look at him from Bruno, you know, Bruno, he, you know, I think he'd scored one win up until Germany and one podium, and then Czech Republic first, Austria third, Misano first, Aragon second, Thailand second, Japan, where he crashed, so forget that one, Australia third, Valencia won, you know. So once they'd got it fixed, if I don't know, if you add up the championship points from there, you know, he might be on top. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we move on to Yamaha, we've barely spoken about half an hour in, is somehow it seems strange not to have spoken about Yamaha. But Jake Yeo has asked back on Lorenzo, Please could you explain the differences between the Ducati, Honda and Yamaha and why they do or don't suit Jorge Lorenzo's style? Is there a quick way of explaining that? Or?
I think the Yamaha is his natural style. It's a 250 style. He changed his... the Yamaha is his natural style because he came from 250. It's all corner speed. The Ducati, he's learnt a completely different style, which is kind of getting it a bit sideways and stopping it and turning it and coming out. So I don't think you'll have a problem at all with the Honda. If Pedrosa could ride the Honda, then Lorenzo could ride the Honda. You know, people who say you'll never win on the Honda, I would be very surprised if he doesn't win on the Honda.
Yeah, I cannot see that. And I think as we were talking about, many times the success that you have is the right time that you go to a certain situation.
Exactly.
And I think that the Honda is beginning to make the changes and making the strides. And from what I understand, and just watching even Mark a little bit at the Valencia test and a couple of clips I saw him with the new bike, I think that he'll make that adjustment. But as Matt said, the Yamaha is certainly the characteristic bike. It allows you to carry more corner speed, and the fact that it will continue to what we call, you know, tighten up the line in the corner, getting the bike in the right position to begin to accelerate. The other thing that was critical for Jorge's style was once he did begin to accelerate is that the bike would hold its line until as you're taking away lean angle. And that's one thing that Ducati suffered from is once it was in the corner is the bike turning, but also once you begin to accelerate, wanted to push the front. It's why you got to get the bike pointed in the right direction. And so it'd be interesting. I think that the changes he had to make on the Ducati are going to make it help him be successful in the Honda.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, Yamaha. Where'd you start?
I think Lynn Jarvis said at Valencia that, you know, finally kind of admitted it, that their problems go back 2 years, which means 2016, which is when the Michelins and the control unified software came in. And if you look at the results, Yamaha won 5 of the first half of the races of 2016 as everybody was trying to sort out the software and the tyres. They've won 6 since. In the 2.5 years since. So as soon as Honda and Ducati had kind of got the Michelins and the software sorted out, they were just off. And Yamaha, for no doubt many, many, many different reasons, just did not adapt. They either underestimated the changes required or they made the wrong changes, who knows what. But, you know, they spent... 2016, you know, they'd won 6 races by the end of the year. They won 5 to start off with and won right at the end of the year. So everybody's like, well, you know. And then obviously 2017, it was like, oh my God, you know, after Vinales has had those wins with the softer front tyre. But, you know, for the last 2 years, Rossi and Vinales have been complaining almost exclusively about electronics. And only about 4, 5, 6 races ago, I think it was Austria when Rossi first mentioned it, was like, hang on, it actually might be the engine, you know. So, and you know, since, I think that was the kind of turning point.
Yeah.
When they were like, okay, you know, you can't create grip with electronics. You create grip mechanically, either through the engine or the chassis.
Well,
and then...
Yeah. That's exactly right, Matt. Well, that's exactly right. The other thing is with electronics is that it can be limiting, you know, and I think that's, they were putting themselves, because then immediately they started complaining about no acceleration. Well, no, not if you're having to have the electronics trying to help create grip for you. Of course, it's going to kill the acceleration. And the other thing that is that a lot of people hear as the writers talk about is corner entry, the bike not stopping. And that also creates an issue of the bike then being out of position, and you have to then get the bike to slow down at a certain point to get it pointed. Well, then you do kill your corner speed, and it affects your direction change. And all these things then changes the place to where you begin to accelerate, which in itself creates a lack of acceleration. Because if you're getting on the throttle later, then the bike, everybody's getting you off the corner. And then what do? You then try to either get more power, and then you create a grip issue. So it's a constantly, you know, you're chasing your tail in that situation, as the old,
it would sort of seem to be a lack of crankshaft inertia, something Freddie has dealt with a lot riding the NR500 and so on. You know, so the engine's spinning up very quickly, so you get wheel spin, and when you shut the throttle, it shuts down very quickly, so the rear tire will lock. This didn't used to be such a problem, because when you had factory electronics, you could tune that out with the engine braking system, and also when you had Bridgestones, they did all the braking on the front, because with the Bridgestone front was much better than the Bridgestone rear, so they did all the braking on the front. And it's the opposite with the Michelin. The Michelin rear is better than the Michelin front.
That's always been the case.
Yeah. The clever ones have worked, and Yamaha again have taken a long time to work that out, that you need the rear tire to help you stop the bike.
Yeah.
And when you shut the throttle and it's skidding the rear tire, or you're having to mess about with the electronics to stop that, then you're losing time, and you're taking longer to stop the bike. You're missing your apex.
Yes.
You're slowing down your speed into the corner.
That's right.
So you can't use the corner speed, which is what the Yamaha wants to do. And if you can't use the corner speed, then you need to open the throttle more to compensate, and then you get wheel spin. So, I mean, it's just all the way through the corner.
Yes.
They've been screwed for the last 2.5 years.
Mm.
And I think they have finally worked that out now.
Didn't they say at the test they had two different new spec engines? The first spec one, I guess, was a big improvement, or, you know, one of the things Maverick said on corner entry for sure. And then I know that they were looking forward to, I guess, second day they were running the second spec, and they were hoping it was going to take the improvement on corner entry, you know, the braking, and have more acceleration. I guess maybe it didn't quite make the improvement that they wanted, but it's a good sign. They're moving in the right direction. I mean, their performance. You look at the win, of course, that Maverick had, and then, you know, Valentino obviously in wet conditions, which is, I guess, they struggle with in 17.
Yeah. Well, and he was so fast at Japan as well.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
I mean, Maverick realized that the rear tire braking thing sooner than Rossi, because around Buriram, he completely changed his bike set up to try and get more load on the rear braking, which obviously isn't difficult. It's very difficult on a motorbike, because obviously, you know, everything goes on the front,
and
the rear wants to come up in the air. But they're having to change the geometry now to try and keep some grip on the rear. So I don't know how they do that. I guess they have to go flatter on the bike or something, because
they would just change the pitch of the bike. And whatever the changes they made, we can even sometimes weight balance, you know, they can do. But whatever changes they made certainly gave him more confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And there was improvement with that. But you look at Valentino's performance in these last couple of races, certainly were an improvement. And you know, it'd be interesting to see if they can, you know, When, as we said earlier, Franco Morbidelli, as soon as he jumped on the 19 bike, you know, he's in the top 10. And coming from the Honda and the difficulty getting on a bike, and I know that feeling. When you get on a bike that is really more forgiving, And as a rider, because you're so used to being having to be ahead of the bike that is more difficult, then now you're getting on one where you feel like you're ahead of it, and you can then really work together and put it and carry more speed at this lean angle and coming now. You know, having ridden the Honda over the weekend and then just one day, and then he gets on this other bike, he knows exactly where it's better. And around a track like Valencia, it would be certainly a lot easier. And so we know they have the chassis. You know, we hadn't talked about the Suzuki. I think that's probably its strongest point. But they get the engine performance there that they need to, and they're going to be tough again.
Yeah, I think they finally, it took them a long time. Everybody's like, what are you, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's the electronics. Why can't you make them better? But, oh, hang on, it's not the electronics. So I think they've finally found their way out of the hole. And I think so long as they continue going in the right direction, I think they'll be back there next year. I really do.
What's it like as a rider, though, coming into a weekend? Normally, you know exactly where you're, well, not exactly where you're going to be, but you know roughly where you'll be on the grid, where you're going to be in the race. Yamaha, most of the year, they didn't know at all on a Friday where they're going to be on the timesheets. How do you approach that as a rider? Just,
well,
you're kind of going into the
unknown.
Yeah,
I mean, you may not know ultimately where you're going to be, because what they were facing, and when you're riding something that doesn't allow you to know exactly what you need to do, or you're having to, as they were doing, constantly chasing setup due to engine characteristic issues or electronic issues or tire compatibility issues, whatever it may be. So you're constantly distracted with trying to get the bike set up to where in this race pace, you know, that's what Valentino's so good at, is figuring that out. And what Maverick struggled with was on full fuel loads and things of being able to run the pace. You know, he was strong at the end of most races, but he really struggled in the beginning. So anyway, it's a distraction as a rider, you know. What you hope is, and when you have a good bike, a bike that is working with you, is you have a base setup, and then you refine it for particular racetracks, depending on grip level, whether it's bumpy or not, and so you'll do some suspension settings, and obviously now with electronics, that would be certainly part of it too. But you kind of know where you're at, and it's just making adjustments to make each lap easier, and also to where you can, as we talk about, manage the tire. Well, they weren't faced with that. They were always kind of lost and trying to just figure out how to get the pace.
I think also just the motivation for Valentino and Maverick was a problem. And you can go kind of so many races without getting anywhere, and then you're putting your heart and soul into it, and then you're still not getting anywhere. And eventually a bit of the heart goes and a bit of the soul goes. It's kind of inevitable, really. And I think actually they both did pretty well, kind of not just giving up entirely, you know. I think because if you're one of those guys, you're expecting to fight for the podium or the win every race, aren't you? And if every race you're fighting for fifth or sixth, it kind of, you know, it's not what you sign up for, really. But
this question could be a yes or no. Came in on Twitter by to you, I believe. Faith Fueled Team said, does Valentino have another win in him, let alone a 10th championship? Or is this season kind of just...
I'd certainly say if we assume that the Yamaha is fully competitive, which is the number one thing, that's the thing that people need to understand, is that all these guys pretty much ride the bikes to the technical limit of the machine and the tyres. You know, if they're having a bad result, it's not because they've been lazy that weekend or whatever. It's because the thing's not working for them for whatever reason. And Mark's probably the only one that actually rides it beyond the limit. But all the other guys are... And so they're bad results this year. I don't think Rossi's a worse racer now than he was last year or the year before. So if the bike is fully competitive next year, I certainly see him winning a race or two. I mean, you know, he nearly won Sepang.
I was
going to
say,
he was
Malaysia,
pretty close, you know.
Malaysia, and Mark said this after the race, and it's one of the things that Mark does a great job of is the way that he talks about, like he didn't need to say this, but he said, listen, I was riding on the edge and Valentino was. He crashed, but any of us could do that, you know. And so, because, you know, it was unfortunate, and it would have been, and Valentino had done everything he needed to do, and he was in that position, and his consistency lap after lap, you know, was basically perfect.
Was unreal, wasn't
it?
And physically,
yeah,
probably one of the, if not the most demanding race of the year. It's 30, 35 degrees.
Right.
It's 40, 50% humidity.
Yeah, exactly. 40 years old.
Yeah, he's 30. He's 40 in February, isn't he?
Yeah.
So people say, oh, he's past it. He doesn't want it anymore. He's not physically strong enough.
Yeah.
If he gets on, if he goes into 2019 thinking, I've got a chance of winning, he will be there, I think. For the championship, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables. And there's so many good guys there
now. Of course,
on good bikes, you know.
Absolutely.
If the Yamaha's good now, the Ducati will be good, the Honda will be good. So
on a given day, which is exactly what Malaysia was, and I could see it almost from the very first lap, the way he was riding, it was like you could see it. It didn't surprise me at all that he was still there with three laps to go, and it did surprise me he crashed, but as Mark said, hey, listen, I was just hanging on myself, so it can happen. And so, well, but I think my answer is if the championship is going to be extremely difficult, it almost would be impossible, but you never know. If it was like 15, where the weather works in his favor and there's certain things and those things can happen, you never know. He could be there at the end, and depending on what happens with the other riders. But for sure, on a given day, like in Malaysia, he's going to be there and have a chance of winning.
Yeah, I mean, if he can sniff the champagne kind of thing, he's on it, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, and he's still, I mean, none of us can work out why, you know, he's 40 in a few months' time, and he's still, and he's richer beyond his wildest dreams. But that obviously isn't that important to him, you know. He just loves riding a motorbike, and he loves winning even more, you know. So,
he,
I mean, how he's still got that at 39 years old, I have no idea. But
he loves Valentino, and he is, that is exactly his purpose and what he does better than anyone.
The funny thing now, of course, is he's beginning to sort of surround himself on the grid with his own riders, you know. He's got, which must be really weird, you know, he's got Bagnaia there, he's got Morbidelli there now. Are there any other VR46 riders next year? I don't think, but you know, another year on there'll be more, you know. And if he can just keep hanging on, he'll, half the grid will be VR46 riders, you know.
So that ticks into rookies, actually. Morbidelli was best rookie, I believe.
This year, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So yeah, we'll save next year.
Sorry,
in,
yeah, yeah,
in
sorry,
the new
yeah,
year.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get confused.
Was he the best rookie, or this year was? Does the table lie in that respect? Do you think?
No, I think I was impressed with the step up that Tito made. It's unfortunate what happened to Tito and where he got knocked out for the season, and obviously not a rookie, but I think Franco, considering what he had to work with the Honda, and as we'll talk in a minute about the test, what he was able to do on the bike. And not every time, you know, I think that maybe sometimes there was some disappointment, even, you know, people expect him to do better maybe, but I thought he did good overall.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I think he did amazingly well because he was on a 2017 Honda.
Yes.
Talking to Nakagami, who also had a 2017 Honda last year, he was third or fourth rookie, I think. He at Valencia at the test, he went from 27 bike to the 2018 bike, which Cal had been riding. He said, wow, you know, that is just chassis pretty much the same, but much sweeter torque and much more top end. So basically, Franco was not riding, you know, he didn't have one of the best bikes out there. And I think he did really well to A, stay on it mostly, and B, to, you know, just keep plugging away and learning, because all racers, they want to get ahead, and it's really hard to tell a young rider, just to say, look, calm down, just learn this year, and then go next for it. And they're just like, yeah, right. you old man, what do you know? You know what I mean? They really want to get going. And so I think he really held himself back a bit now because he realized it wasn't a super comfortable bike to ride. So he just did the best he could. And yeah, he impressed me a lot. Siren as well. I mean, considering that he only got the ride at mid-February. Yeah. He impressed me a lot.
Yeah. And I think was Morbidelli kind of held back a little bit by the expectations of how good he was in Moto 2?
I don't think so, no. I think he's a clever... The thing is, nowadays, they're all clever guys, and they've all got clever people around them. Well, most of them have, and he's got Valentino on it beside. And Valentino is like a mentor to all these guys, and he's just there to say, look, I did this wrong, I did that wrong, just so you know. And they'll go, okay. So to have him there, they go to speak to him every night in his motorhome. I mean, you know. He's got the best teacher in the world there, you know.
Yep. And of the independents, obviously Cal had his accident, which ironically came after one of his best results of the year. How do you rate his season? Good.
I thought, because they had that big step up in horsepower. He had the factory bike, so he had the big step up in torque and horsepower, and that made all the difference. The Honda is still a bike that you have to ride aggressively to get the best out of it, but that's how Cal rides. You know, he's a very aggressive rider. He's kind of like Mark in a way. So I think he did great. And, you know, he made a few mistakes, as he does, but towards the end of the year, he seemed to get into a really good groove,
yeah.
You know, and wow, it was just very, very sad. And that wasn't his fault, that crash. You know, you're coming down the start-finish straight at Phillip Island at 200 miles an hour, and... There's not grandstand, but there's all the banking where the spectators stand. And then you come down towards turn one and the banking ends and the wind's coming at you. And you tip it into the first corner at 130 miles an hour and the wind just takes your front wheel away. And that's why he crashed. So, you know, he really didn't deserve it. And it was a bad break. And, spoiled. Because he just seemed to have got into a really good groove. And I think he would have kept, you know, maybe not on the podium every race, but fourth, fifth, you know, that's pretty good.
To me, the biggest improvement, and I agree with Matt, is Cal's consistency. Is every week he was right there, and not only in the race, but his speed, his outright speed. He was battling for the front row, and Cal is a workman type rider, and he definitely right. He is, and like Alex Barros was, you know, where he could win a race, and he is going to win one. But he pushes, and he's aggressive, and he obviously has a very good situation where he has with the Honda team, and helping doing some development work and things, and so. It'll be, most important thing for him is obviously getting over this injury. Yeah, and getting back and healthy and getting back out there next season. And I would expect him to pick right up where he left off, really.
Yeah, he's about as hard as they come,
yeah.
Cal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Zarco, kind of mixed year. You were, I'm not sure if you're critical, but said that his mind had kind of drifted off a bit mid-season.
I think, and I've seen this before, and Freddie would have seen this before, you see a rider, they kind of, you know, somebody called him the warrior monk, and he's lived a very, basically his mentor and manager and everything, basically he's lived with him for the last 5-6 years, and he basically, you know, he's kind of, it's almost like he's been at boarding school, kind of, you know, sort of, this is what you're going to do, da-da-da-da-da, and as is the case, there's a time where you need to fly the nest, isn't there, you know, and so he... I think he kind of split up with his manager and so on, and they're not going to work together again. And I think also maybe, I could be wrong, but I know my career was kind of like that, but I remember, you know, for several years I didn't really care much about hurting myself, you know, because I'd come from nothing and didn't matter, you know. And then I started doing all right and da-da-da-da, and you'd go on nice holidays with your girlfriend and you'd, life would start being nice, you know, and you think, wow, I don't want to hurt myself, you know what I mean? And I don't know that, but it just sort of struck a little bit of a chord because, you follow people on social media and so on, you see what they're up to and you're going, you look like you might have lost a little bit of focus there. You know, you seem to be, you know, there's more, no pictures of you down the gym anymore. It's pictures of you kind of, yeah, whatever. But I could be wrong. But then somebody did say that he always has a mid-season slump, which is really weird. He did it in Moto 2, you know, strong results in the middle of the season, has a slump, strong results at the end. And he did that this year. So, you know, maybe I was completely wrong.
Just Zarco being Zarco.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because he's taking the opposite journey that Morbidelli's taken. You know, he's gone from a very friendly Yamaha to an RC16 KTM, which is about as close as to the Honda as you can get. You know, and you're going to have to work very different to get the lap time. It's just a completely way of getting a different way of getting. Would you say that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. And I think it's. It's a harsh wake-up call for him in the 2 days at Valencia. And, you know, coming from a controlled situation, and I'd heard the same thing, that he really lived. You know, he had the manager and things. It was exactly what you said. And it's going to be interesting because you see a lot of riders that come along that – show a lot of potential, especially lower levels, and then they graduate up, and then you get into the top level where ability levels are very close. And what separates and makes people winners, and I'm not talking just champions, but just race winners, is the mental side of it, you know. And sometimes you'll have someone be a winner, but you know, on a, it just goes their way that day. But to consistently do it, even if they were world champions, it's a different task. And I'm still interested to see if he has that strength. And it is a strength that is required at the very top level. And the KTM ride is going to test him because. There's a lot of expectation, him coming into that program, and I watched him walk in the truck that first day, and he had his helmet back, and there was a clip of it, and I'm not sure if I, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he's up to that, help him develop the bike, take it to the next level, what it's going to take effort-wise. A bike that's difficult like that each and every week. Going back, that's what, you know, makes Mark not just a great champion, but because he knows what he faces. And I've been in that situation where, you know, the crew says as good as it gets, and you know the only way you're going to win the next day is you're going to have to do something extra. And so does he have that inside him? Be interesting to see.
And it's so close now that I don't think most people understand mental intensity that these guys bring to every race, and that you have to be, you can't be 99% anymore, you can't even be 99.5% anymore, you've got to be 100% mentally focused, willing to lay it on the line, how you work, how you take your risks, how you, everything has to be 100%. Now which of us turns up, you know, if you've got a normal job, who turns up for work 100% every day of their life? You just don't, do you? But these guys have to. And that is an incredibly difficult thing to do, especially when you're doing something that's basically quite dangerous, you know? It's incredibly difficult to do. And goes back to sort of guys like Barros. You know, he used to win a couple of races here, win a race there. And Crevilla, you know, they were... They didn't have what Mick had. You know, he would just turn up at every race, bang, 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 bang. And he was like he was a scary machine. You know, he really was. At a race, you know, you did not speak to Mick unless you had to at a race, because he would bite your head off. You know, and because he was so in that zone. He didn't want anybody. You know, he was fantastic to watch if a journalist asked him a stupid question. He just pretty much literally bit their head off. You know, it was wonderful to watch, actually. Yeah, it was good.
I think we've just ticked over the hour, so we better wrap up KTM, Aprilia and Suzuki somehow quickly, and then also next year. You've said recently that you think KTM will make the biggest leap forward. I guess they've got to make the biggest leap forward, and next year could be another.
Yeah, I would think. I expected him actually to make a little better, more improvement this year, but in their defense, they also had some things that worked against them. Had the riders get hurt, test rider got hurt, and that certainly. I think, well, obviously, with Danny Petrosa coming on board to be a test rider, they're in a good position to make some improvements over this next year that should be interesting to see. And with Paul, you know, one of the great things about the race on Sunday was his first podium and KTM's first podium. In tricky conditions, but still, you know, they got third. So that's inspiring for the team, but I would have to say they're going to make the improvements. The Suzuki, real quick, the Suzuki just continued to improve. And you watch Alec Rins and Alex, you know, I put riders in different categories of talking potential and getting the job done. And Alex gets the job done, doesn't he?
He's kind of almost stealth, isn't he? Yes. You barely notice he's there.
Yeah, but on Sunday, you do on Sunday afternoons, he's leading the race.
Exactly. You never see him pull a dangerous maneuver. No. He never says anything stupid.
You never see him on Friday, Harley.
Barely notice him. Yeah. And then, there he is.
On Sunday, he's right there.
But that bike, you know, when Aleix Espargaró rode it first in 2015, 2016, he gave it the best compliment I think you can give a race bike. He said it steers and handles like a 250. Yeah. You know, and you can see it's such a neat, beautiful little machine. Yeah. And all they've lacked is power. Apparently the new engine they have that Guintoli's been testing for the last few months has that top end that they need. And I think, well, Marquez had already said it, that he thinks they'll be there in the championship battle this year.
Yeah, next year. I do too.
Aprilia, they took a huge step back this year. They kind of completely redesigned the bike, which kind of nowadays it's always been a bad, it's like putting the petrol tank under the, let's put the petrol tank under the engine. They completely redesigned the bike and it was disaster. No traction, couldn't get heat into the tyres. And then they completely came up with this lab bike for the last three races, which is a kind of 2017, 2018, 2019 hybrid. And suddenly they're back on they've kind of found a direction again. So I think, you know, they're the smallest team, tiny compared to the other, the biggest factories. So, but I think, I hope, and now they've got two, you know, they've got their best rider lineup as well. So I think, you know, I hope they'll be closer next year. I think
didn't he say after the test on Tuesday that or Monday he was surprised the bike was pretty good, and he comes obviously from the Suzuki, so that's actually not a good compliment.
No, I think they've kind of,
and Aprilia is always, I've always thought their super bike, when especially when Max was riding, and I've ridden it. I said before, I did a test with a bunch of big bikes, and I loved riding the Aprilia. It was the best handling. And so if they can bring some of that DNA and in their MotoGP bike, they'll be right there. You know, at least have a decent bike.
Is Iannone the right man to get that out of the bike?
I think Iannone's a great rider. You know, he needs to work on a few things like looking after the tyres, because, you know, you see him going very fast at the start of the race and then going backwards, so, which is something they've all had to work on with the Michelin. It's just, and also with the unified software, not having very good traction control is just relearning, just being super, super smooth with the throttle. So I think he's great. And as a character, I like him as well. I find him, you know, you need that full range, and that's where MotoGP is so lucky. It's got the full range of characters, from Iannone, the sort of wannabe gangster kind of guy, and, you know, and I actually like him, you know, because he's kind of funny, yes. You know.
But Suzuki right to drop him, though, do you think?
Well, Dave even said, I think, that if he would have had the performance...
That's watching Matt. I know. I'm not pointing fingers. That if he would have had the performance right that he had, obviously from mid-season on, or this, they wouldn't have. And it's part of which I know we don't have time to talk about. Is part of what we talk about, making the rider decision so early.
Yeah, it just got stupid this
year. Yeah, exactly.
It was just a mass panic. Everyone was like, "My God, I've got to sign somebody now, otherwise I'm going to be left without anyone." So it kind of, you know.
We have another question.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah, we can. Alan,
no, I was going to say, don't you agree that MotoGP and the whole championship talking about it's as good as it gets? That, you know, it's as far as motorsports championships, and I know we have a lot of viewers that watch different ones, but they've done a great job. And it's really good personality wise, equipment wise, without question. You know, I was at Valencia and watching the from Race Control, and I was watching the race, and it kind of made me feel like this sense of pride that this championship that I first became involved with over 30 years ago, and 30 plus years obviously, and has really grown to the point and is producing what matters, which is that action on Sunday afternoon.
They made
at
all
the
right calls.
Absolutely.
With the technical rules, which I don't really follow Formula One, but it seems that they made a lot of wrong calls with rules, and technical rules are very tricky things to work out, because you get the unintended rule of unintended consequences, where you make a rule to stop that and it actually creates a whole different problem, much bigger than the problem. But I think Dorna, Corrado Ceccanelli, Mike Webb, Danny Aldridge, all those guys who've been coming up with the rules have done a great job, and they've just been over the last 10 years gradually putting them in place.
Yes.
And it's taken until the last couple of years to get everything right.
Yeah. That said, the factories also deserve a bit of credit. It's also, they're all pushing in the same direction, which you can't say the same in Formula One.
Well, they're all pulling in the same. In what way? Technically, or philosophically?
I think
they're willing to work for the good of the sport.
Yeah, yeah. I think they all realize they're in it together.
Yes.
Which is rare in motorsport.
I think in the MSMA meetings, it can get pretty feisty, you know, because they're all fighting their own corners, obviously. But I think Dorna have also worked very hard to impress this upon them. That, you know, that they're there to help with the show, not just to do their own thing. You know, they're actually part of a show. They're not just there to do their own development, do blah, blah, blah. They're actually got to help create this big thing.
And the show is good as well, isn't it? What Dorna have done for fans from
The racing is just... Yeah, and you know, I think everything can always get better. But, I mean, I think the racing is as close as you want it to be now. I actually don't think you want to make it any closer, because we've seen some incidents already where, you know, you've got big gangs of riders riding together at very high speed. And if you've ever been in somebody's slipstream at 200 miles an hour, it's pretty scary. And you don't really have a lot of control over your motorcycle, do you? Mm. You know, you're getting buffeted around. And, you know, so that thing that happened with Zarco and Marquez at Phillip Island, that sort of showed that what can happen. And, you know, that ended well, but I think people have to be quite wary that we don't want to keep making it so closer. It's good enough, you know.
But the thing is that if you are going to make it closer, is you do other things and you stay on top of it, which they're doing, Dorna and Erta and even the FIM, and it's all thinking in that direction about the importance of preventative measures and the safety aspect of it, and it's a good team of people.
I think what BT Sport have done this year is the 360 camera on the back. I think a couple of times we've been on Zarco's bike. That gives you a real visceral kind of sensation of just how close these things are. And a lot of the coverage that is around now, BT Sports coverage is really good, and people can't help but get involved. We have more people commenting on the website saying they're leaving Formula One more so to watch MotoGP.
I think on the Dorna site, and I use that a lot, the MotoGP.com feed, because I can, you know, if I'm writing a story and I'm thinking, so I need to just check what happened there. So you could just go back to that, you know, two races ago or whatever, bang, you're straight there. And they every race they do a first lap from multi on boards, which is just, you know, because people don't realize how vicious it is. You know, these guys are being really nasty to each other. You know, they're not just riding their motorbikes around in circles. They're doing some pretty heavy stuff to each other, you know. And when you watch that multi on board and you just see and sort of handlebar levers, you know, and everything tangling up, that's pretty scary, you know.
Was it like that?
I'd say it looks worse than it actually is. Said, you know, but you know, it's great, and you have what a rider wants, and this is the other thing that I think they've done a good job is giving the teams and the support of the teams, which is the IRTA, which is the International Race Team Association, and the group of team owners. The support to be able to give the riders the tools they need and the equipment. If you look just a few years ago, and that improvement you got to take your hat off to them, and they've done a great job.
A lot down to Mike Trimby and Erta arguing the case of the lower teams.
Yes.
And basically, MotoGP has done the opposite to what Formula One and the Premier League have done. Instead of giving all the money to the guys at the front, mm-hmm. who don't really need it, is taking some of that money and giving it to the guys at the back to try and bring them closer to the front, and then that makes the racing better. You know, it's not right. hard to work out, but
right.
they've actually done the abnormal thing, and that's one of the reasons why the lower teams are suddenly, apart from the technical rules, they've also got the money to get a bit better. You know?
Yes, exactly, and that is an important part about the strength and the depth of field and they understand that, and they've done a great job.
Yeah, and of course, you're next year going to be every rider's best friend.
Well, it's why we was talking about the closeness of the racing. Yeah, be the FIM MotoGP Stewards Panel Chairman. Sounds like a mouthful and a really important. But
he's going to be Freddie's going to be like the kind of the headmaster, and he's going to wear and he's going to call these 15-year-old, 16-year-old kids into his headmaster's room, and I hope educate rather than sort of shouting them.
Yes,
Freddie doesn't really do shouting, so he'll hopefully, which a lot of other ex-riders would, they would just bring the riders in and say, "Don't do that again," but Freddie will sit down and say, "You know, you shouldn't do this again because blah 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 blah."
Yeah,
you know, and,
exactly.
and that's to me how you got to deal with these kids. You know, well with any kids, in fact. You know?
Yeah, and they're professionals and riders of all levels. And my first weekend, I'll be starting obviously at Qatar the first next year, and I am looking forward to it. And it's a privilege to be asked to be a part of the championship that played such an important part of my life. And I had no idea that they were considering. I got a call from Mike Trimby, and he asked, and I just thought about it for a short period of time, or day or so, and my thought was only, what could I bring, and what would I do, and in what ways? Because what I feel like is it's an incredible championship, and the racing's only going to get closer, and the goal is to go in and to talk about preventative things to help them understand why that it is a privilege to be a part of this championship, and we all are invested in that, and that's why when I say about my respect for what Dorna and Erta and the teams have done is because everybody wants that, and that was something we talked about when I accepted this opportunity. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. I think we better wrap this up before Alan tells us off. But we'll hopefully be able to hear all about that in the new year with this secret new event, which we'll hopefully be launching soon. and we'll also be back just before the season, probably to have a preview of the season. So it gives you a few months to decide if Marquez is going to win it again. So we will be back on the Motorsport podcast soon with a Formula One podcast, hopefully, looking back on the season. So we will see you then. Thanks, Freddie. Thanks, Matt. Thanks,
Alan.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.